"My boy, my boy," the familiar raspy voice said. "How have you been, my boy?" "Very well, sir," Gennaro replied. He leaned back in the padded leather chair of the Gulfstream II jet as it flew east toward the Rocky Mountains. "You never call me anymore," Hammond said reproachfully. "I've missed you, Donald. How is your lovely wife?"
"She's fine, Elizabeth's fine. We have a little girl now."
"Wonderful, wonderful. Children are such a delight. She'd get a kick out of our new park in Costa Rica."
Gennaro had forgotten how short Hammond was. As he sat in the chair, his feet didn't touch the carpeting. He swung his legs as he talked. There was a childlike quality to the man, even though Hammond must now be, what, 75, 76, something like that. He looked older than Gennaro remembered, but then Gennaro hadn't seen him for almost 5 years. Hammond was flamboyant, a born showman. And back in 1983, he had had an elephant that he carried around with him in a little cage. The elephant was 9 inches high and a foot long and perfectly formed, except his tusks were stunted. Hammond took the elephant with him to fundraising meetings. Gennaro usually carried it into the room, the cage covered with a little blanket like a tea cozy, and Hammond would give his usual speech about the prospects for developing what he called consumer biologicals. Then, at the dramatic moment, Hammond would whip away the blanket to reveal the elephant, and he would ask for money. The elephant was always a rousing success. Its tiny body, hardly bigger than a cat's, promised untold wonders to come from the laboratory of Norman Atherton, the Stanford geneticist who was Hammond's partner in the new venture. But as Hammond talked about the elephant, he left a great deal unsaid. For example, Hammond was starting a genetics company, but the tiny elephant hadn't been made by any genetic procedure. Atherton had simply taken a dwarf elephant embryo and raised it in an artificial womb with hormonal modifications. That in itself was quite an achievement, but nothing like what Hammond hinted had been done. Also, Atherton hadn't been able to duplicate his miniature elephant, and he'd tried. For one thing, everybody who saw the elephant wanted one. Then, too, the elephant was prone to colds, particularly during winter. The sneezes coming through the little trunk filled Hammond with dread. And sometimes the elephant would get his tusks stuck between the bars of the cage and snort irritably as he tried to get free. Sometimes he got infections around the tusk line. Hammond always fretted that his elephant would die before Atherton could grow a replacement. Hammond also concealed from prospective investors the fact that the elephant's behavior had changed substantially in the process of miniaturization. The little creature might look like an elephant, but he acted like a vicious rodent, quick-moving and mean-tempered. Hammond discouraged people from petting the elephant to avoid nipped fingers. And although Hammond spoke confidently of $7 billion in annual revenues by 1993, his project was intensely speculative. Hammond had vision and enthusiasm, but there was no certainty that his plan would work at all, particularly since Norman Atherton, the brains behind the project, had terminal cancer, which was a final point Hammond neglected to mention. Even so, with Gennaro's help, Hammond got his money. Between September of 1983 and November of 1985, John Alfred Hammond and his pachyderm portfolio raised $870 million in venture capital to finance his proposed corporation, International Genetic Technologies Incorporated. And they could have raised more, except Hammond insisted on absolute secrecy, and he offered no return on capital for at least 5 years. That scared a lot of investors off. In the end, they'd had to take mostly Japanese consortia. The Japanese were the only investors who had the patience.